Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Fendrin Cast 1, 2, 3. We are in the team car and we are enjoying the fact that it's well before 8 o'clock in the morning and it's still 21 degrees. Had a lovely spin this morning out and about after around 6-ish. It was very pleasant. We're not here to talk about my little ring training rides the morning after a time trial. We're here to talk about the tour and the fact that we are hurtling towards the end. This is our second, supposed to be our second rest day wrap. Of course, the rest day was a couple of days ago now. But when we last spoke, the tour was through the Vosges and heading its way down south before the time trial and the Pyrenees. And it was kind of like, if week one kind of went to Lotto, actually not even called Lotto anymore, either Jumbo-Visma, week two certainly went to Julian Alaphilippe. Maybe not De Koninck in their entirety, but certainly to Alaphilippe. Although I suppose Viviani had already got a stage, hadn't he, by that point. I suppose the French, would you call him a climber? Even though he was King of the Mountains last year, he's kind of more renowned for his breakaway skills and his classics prowess and his sprinting ability and all of that kind of stuff, as opposed necessarily to being a GC contender. I don't think anyone particularly was talking about him. If they were, fantastic. Well worked. You're very profound. But no one was talking about him necessarily as a man for the tour this year, certainly. But after kind of defending his lead at the Planche de Belfi, he then got through the rest of that week and emerged back into the glitz and glamour of the time trial. And he was fairly fairly dominant. It was a massive surprise to me that he actually took time in the TT. People said, you know, and they kind of almost justified it by saying this is an Alaphilippe type course. You know, we've got a pretty steep, lumpy finish and it's not super long. But, you know, he was ripping into people. He was ripping into people that far and that much with his time that it wasn't long before the questions about his authenticity certainly were raised. And I think a lot of that by the English-speaking media was seen as a bit of bitterness towards him because of the fact that he was sticking it to the Brits. And when the Brits were as dominant and producing rides of this nature, the French almost laughed at them. And I suppose in some ways, with that in mind, there's no reason why they shouldn't accept the scrutiny coming the other way. For what it's worth, I think the fact that Alaphilippe does look like he's starting to tire and he has put a lot into the first week and a half, 2 weeks of the tour, I still think that I've got a small bet with my wife that he won't be within 20 minutes of the race lead by the end of the tour. But you never know, do you? You never know. And the way he's riding, he could well, you know, he could well hang on, or, you know, from somewhere he could find, you know, even more. And, you know, if he does, fair play to him, respect to him, he's, you know, he's earned it. And that's fair enough. Where do we go from the time trial? We go to the first of what probably should be called the Thibaut Pinot Pyrenees, because he was that dominant in the Pyrenees. You know, you almost now look at the time lost in the crosswind as his margin, which it more or less, give or take 10 seconds, is to the overall lead. So you would look at that, but then would he have been as incredible and irresistible to watch in the Pyrenees if he wasn't coming from quite a long way back? The question is whether he's got the legs and the morale to keep kind of chipping away. So far, he's not took big time back when he's took his time back, because, you know, he's on enough of a leash that the GC contenders know that he's still, you know, far enough back. I think the podium is almost nailed on for him. But the question, I suppose, remains, has he got that minute? Where's he going to find that minute? Because he's going to need a big attack, and he's going to need every one of the other contenders not to not to be a factor and not to want to try and chase him or not to want to get involved in a drag race. So it could be that we we're still getting that French winner. It's going to be Pinot now, not as we predicted Romain Bardet. Or could Alaphilippe do the unthinkable? What's been interesting in the stages has been, despite everyone trying to talk it down, the clear differences in the performance of the Ineos leaders, Thomas, as they call him, the diesel engine, kind of getting into the climbs and not going with all the explosive efforts, whereas Bernal can go with the explosive efforts, but then, you know, can he stick it? And, you know, a couple of times he's gone with the big accelerations, but then not necessarily been able to stay with Pino in the second of the finishes. So where do they go from here? Their tactic seemed to have got Thomas, you know, losing time because he had to stick with Alaphilippe and Kruiswijk the other day when Bernal was off up the road, but Thomas is still the one ahead in the GC. But when the attacks go, Thomas doesn't go or can't go necessarily with them. He has to be more measured in how he follows attacks. So they've got a problem for the first time in probably since Wiggins was laying on the road with his broken collarbone in 2011. They've got a big problem, Sky, in how they manage the next few days. Whether because Bernal is the one behind on GC, whether they fire him out of the group with a couple of mountains to go, maybe today. There is a time bonus on the top of the last climb, so that could be an incentive to get someone away. Who knows? It's also been interesting to see that, like, these middle stages, that because the race is, the GC is a bit more open, we've not had a train of riders on the front, and breakaways have managed to succeed. Simon Yates has bagged a couple of stages. Memorably yesterday, Matteo Trentin bagged a stage. Just before we last did our first week wrap, Thomas de Gendt, of course, had memorably won his stage. So it has been interesting to see that we've got a tour less controlled, less about one team sitting on the front, and more open, and that's actually aided the breakaways. Now, whether this is a result of the eight-man teams, or whether it's just the fact that Quickstep aren't used to being in this position of dominating a Grand Tour and having a yellow jersey, and they just don't necessarily feel that they can control it in that position. It's not like at the moment they've let anyone back in GC-wise who's a threat to Alaphilippe. So from their perspective, they're probably happy just to let breaks go and just do what they can to manage them, rather than try and control the race in the sort of way that we've seen from Ineos over the years. And it's interesting to hear Dave Brailsford talk this week about how he, for the first time ever, it's kind of like, even though he's saying all the right things that he wants to win, and it, you know, if he can't win, then, you know, but he's not thinking about that. He did at least admit the other day that if they didn't win, or one of their riders didn't win, that they felt that it would be better and more beneficial for the sport if a French guy won. And that's kind of almost a shift change for them, thinking bigger picture, because, of course, a bigger and better and, you know, kind of more commercially viable Tour de France, which you would think, having had a home winner, it would be, is better for them as well in the long run. So whilst there is still that element of competitiveness in his speech, there is also an acknowledgement that, you know, maybe it's time for a French winner. And it's something that, you know, we've certainly said for a while. I can't remember more or less the last French winner, and I've watched the Tour since the mid-80s. So, you know, we have to hope that there is an opportunity soon for someone to win it. It's you know, the best and biggest comparison that people discuss is the one with Wimbledon and Andy Murray, and the fact that, you know, tennis did get a bit of a boost and a bit of a shot in the arm when Murray did win it. So let's hope that's the same if Alaphilippe or Thibaut Pinot can win this Tour de France. There's been some interesting other subplots to this race. Nairo Quintana, who's been linked heavily with going to RKA Samsic, which seems to be a retirement home for riders who need money rather than results, with, you know, the likes of Warren Barguil and Andre Greipel on their roster. And as a result, I think his team have kind of almost sacrificed him, and they're riding with like seven riders. It was interesting, on the first Pyrenean stage, they rode on the front as he sailed off the back. It was only, you know, riders from their train getting dropped that kind of tried to get him back on, and obviously they were spent having made their effort. It's clear that the whole team seems to be riding for Mikel Landa, and the whole team seems to be not interested in Quintana or any sort of dialogue or correspondence with him. It was just the most bizarre thing in the world to see Landa and the team on the front, and, you know, one of the regular annual contenders for the Tour de France over the last few years, just disappearing off the back. He lost more time on a flat stage the day before yesterday, so, you know, there is an element of wonder whether he's ill, whether he's deliberately losing time because he's going on a long raid in the Alps. I don't know. You know, maybe he will. Maybe he'll suddenly emerge from the shadows and he'll go on a long break up the road and he'll be able to help Landa springboard back up the GC a bit further. But I don't know. You know, I don't see it. The last tour that Chris Froome won, Landa was the strongest rider in the final week. Fortunately for Froome, he was on Team Sky and in a position where, you know, he was expected to help Froome out. This time he could be a proper jack-in-the-box, proper wild card. So Movistar, always a story, always entertaining, especially when David Miller's commentating on them, because he always expresses massive bamboozlement of what their plans and what their strategy are. And whereas 3 or 4 years ago, the strategy of getting teammates in early breakaways in mountain stages so that, you know, leaders could ride across to them and use them and then keep going seemed to work, it's not necessarily a tactic that has borne massive fruit in recent years. The last 2 or 3 years, and I think teams have worked it out, but it seems to be Movistar's plan A, B, you know, and C. But if, you know, their plan A involves Quintana being off the road and Landa coming across to him, then they could still be fairly dangerous in the last weeks of the last days of the tour. Jumbo Visma have been riding pretty well. They've got a multitude of stage wins, with the team time trial, with Mike Ternesen, with Wout van Aert, and with Dylan Groenewegen. They're now starting to lose riders, and you wonder whether that'll impact Kruiswijk. Van Aert had that awful crash in the time trial where he ended up cutting his leg to the bone, which is not a good position to be in. And he's been hospitalised, and there's a lot of stuff to go with that he might be needing more surgery. So that's a blow for them, and the blow's got worse, and also for Ineos. And now, if you were a conspiracy theorist, you'd say that the race jury are now even more desperate for a French winner because they're taking out the teammates of the other contenders. Because from what the TV footage was last night, the altercation between Tony Martin and Luke Rowe seemed to be fairly, there was very little sort of contact. They were just trying to battle for the front of the peloton. It's the stuff that happens in a sprint finish in fast speed all the time. It kind of was happening in slow motion in front of the TV cameras at the bottom of a climb, and both riders have been sent home from the race. And I think, you know, while Rowe fessed up to the media and kind of said he'd let himself down and all those kind of things, there was a general look of bamboozlement, and you do wonder whether everyone's that all in for a French winner of this tour, or it could be that, you know, this is a genuine incident that and there was stuff that the TV cameras didn't see. And, you know, things are going in the favour of the home riders. But it didn't look to me like the sort of incident that should require expulsion. But, you know, then again, I'm not a I'm not a commissaire, and you know, if anyone is, they're more than welcome to explain the ruling and what ruling was used for that decision. I'm sure there'll be an appeal. You know, maybe by the time the stay starts today, they could even be back in. You never know. So we'll keep an eye on that story. So what's coming up? We've got the Alps. Not as many of the big favourite tour climbs after today. We've got the Galibier and the Izoard. That's going to be probably... I think this could be the day where you maybe lose one or two favourites out the back. And in terms of GC favourites not in the race, only really Fuglsang's gone home after his crash the other day. Whilst quite a lot of the other contenders aren't necessarily riding that well or aren't in form. Bardet and Quintana probably being the big examples of that. Then I think today could be a day for maybe one or two others, you know, like a Yates who's lost massive time, maybe an Uran, someone like that. I think the attacks will be out the back rather than off the front, maybe. I think that people are even looking as far as Saturday's stage as possibly being the one that defines the race. And with people maybe already having that seed planted in their mind, could we see, you know, like a couple of the big days in the Alps where not a great amount happens, possibly. I'd much prefer, you know, the option where the Alps are really, really exciting and there's a lot of action, a lot of activity, and we see, you know, riders not, you know, wouldn't it be great to see Emmanuel Buchmann try and get in a breakaway and, you know, maybe think, okay, fifth place or 20th place makes no odds, I could try and win this. You know, he's probably the worst example because people feel that, you know, he's kind of, you know, his target's top 10, top 5, and then maybe see where he's at. But, you know, wouldn't it be great to see something like that, a big attack with an Uran or someone like, you know, 8th or 9th in GC, a Richie Port going on a long-range attack, just to try and draw the favourites out and just to see, you know, how the race is, how good some of them feel. Because I think one or two of the favourites maybe have got... They're probably close to their limit, I think. And if not, they should be, because it's been a hard Tour de France and a fascinating Tour de France as well. And you know, already we've got those conversations of where people think this one fits in history. I kind of agree that it's probably been one of the most fascinating and exciting races of the last 20, 30 years. You look at that, you know, Le Mans Fignon probably as being the one that people talk about the most because of the fact that there was two of them going for the jersey and it exchanged hands. And, you know, maybe if Pinot hadn't lost that time and him and Alaphilippe were within 10 seconds and the jersey had gone from one to the other, you know, we would be talking probably about one of the greatest Tour de France's of all time. Whereas, as it is, it's still well up there because it's got all the elements. It's got, you know, a surprise leader who's clinging on and maybe, you know, about to either, you know, hold on till the last weekend or disappear. We've got another French contender backing that up, and we've got the winner of last year, unsure about, you know, his form, had a couple of crashes, and has got a young pretender in his team who could be stronger. It's got all the elements of, you know, like a classic last few days. And, you know, fingers crossed, it is a classic last few days because, you know, the Tour has been accused of being boring under Sky's reign. And I think even Geraint Thomas talked about that in his press conference that, you know, boring's fine for him because he's winning and the team's winning. But for the benefit of the race, you almost need that element of suspense. You almost need that element of drama and excitement. So the next few days have got a real opportunity to not only get us a new winner of the Tour de France, but also, you know, cement it in history. And you just think now, if in the Alps Ineos suddenly choke the race and one of their riders wins by the fact that their pace, you know, their domestiques can go so hard that they put everyone else out the back, you almost feel now that that would be a bit of an anticlimax after what has come before. You almost feel as well that there's not that much chance of that happening just because of the pattern of the race and how the race has gone so far. I don't suddenly feel that they're going to get a massive measure of control over everything, and especially when they're, you know, Luke Rodown, who's been riding in you know, on the front in mountain stages for them. So, uncontrolled, exciting, anything can happen. Fingers crossed that's the way the Tour de France ends. We'll be back, though, next week to wrap it all up in a final wrap-up show. Until then, though, keep following us on the website, fendrian.eu. Keep sharing, liking, all that kind of stuff. And we'll be back in touch. Take care.